Chapter 28 Elias.
"Keep your heads down and do only as I do," comes the command of the protector. The Nightingale warriors all nod beneath their hoods, expressions grim. "Stay close and keep your weapons hidden. If any of you believe in the light, now is the time to start praying."
With that, Elias makes his way out of the alley and down the street, keeping his stride leisurely and slow. Behind him, a team of 5 men shuffle out as well, their speed matching his perfectly.
"Now comes the hard part," he thinks, shoulders brushing against nearby pedestrians. "Let's see if the light is truly on our side."
It's a gray day in Tarsus, the clouds hanging low and obscuring the sun. Columns of white smoke billow from the city's sewers and chimneys, clogging the air with a myriad of contrasting smells, while icy slush splashes underfoot, the sodden result of last week's snowstorm. Fortunately, with the cold of winter gripping the city, it has resulted in everyone dressing in thick wools and cloaks, allowing the 6 assassins to blend in seamlessly as they make their way through the market.
"That's one stroke of luck, at least," Elias thinks to himself as they trudge along.
The men accompanying him are the finest warriors the rebellion has to offer, and were hand-picked by the highest-ranking Nightingales in the army. The 5 of them, including Captain Sturgis, were all too eager to join this mission, desiring to serve justice to the man who had caused them so much pain in recent months.
"There was a time when I'd be as enthusiastic as them," Elias muses, wending his way through the crowd. "I have too much experience now to be so eager for blood."
They'd snuck into the city under cover of darkness, smuggling themselves in with the help of a local gang of thieves. For the past several days, they've been doing reconnaissance work, scoping out the best plan of attack and preparing themselves for every foreseeable outcome. Now that the day has come, Elias can't help but feel like they are missing something, a key piece of information to prevent them from getting killed.
"A mission is never perfect," he reminds himself. "We can't afford to wait any longer. Perfection is the enemy of done."
Armed with swords, knives, and miniaturized crossbows hidden beneath their cloaks, the Nightingale elites determinedly make their way toward their destination, the secret entrance to the royal palace. Although not trained like the Shadow Blades, the warriors seem to have taken Elias's brief lessons to heart. They move like the common people, a predatory grace hidden beneath their humble facade. His thoughts drift briefly to Owen and the months they'd spent together stalking through the Emberwood. Elias wishes he could be here watching his back. The apprentice had learned to be as stealthy as him, and he was a formidable fighter. Elias feels a pang of remorse and quickly shakes his head to banish the thoughts.
"I can't let myself think about that now," he berates himself. "We have a job to do. When it's complete, then I can worry about springing Owen and Zara out of whatever dungeon the king has them in."
Passing through the market undetected, they duck into another alley and begin making their way deeper into the city. Beggars and vagrants huddle beneath their rags as the armed men pass, but none say anything as they flit from alley to alley, keeping to the shadowed, less populated neighborhoods of Tarsus. Soon they find themselves at a dead end, a steaming metal grate set into the cobblestone ground.
"Is this it?" Sturgis asks, keeping his voice low. "It is," Elias replies, crouching and wrapping his gloved fingers around the dripping bars.
He gives it a sharp tug, and the grate comes free with a metallic screech. Everyone tenses, looking to the entrance of the alley to see if anyone about heard the noise. After a moment, they relax when no one comes to investigate. He sets the grate aside, leaning it against the nearest wall and peering down into the gaping, man-sized hole.
"That smells awful," one of the men, Malik, complains, crinkling his nose in disgust.
"That's our way into the palace," Elias says dryly, reaching beneath his cloak and pulling up a small ceramic lamp. "So unless you have another way of getting to the king, I suggest you keep quiet and breathe through your mouth."
The Nightingale grunts but says nothing, glancing apprehensively at the sewer's entrance. Pulling out his belt knife and a flint, Elias scratches out a few sparks and lights the lamp, crouching down once more to examine the hole. The thieves who'd helped them, the red-fisted dogs, assured him that this sewer still led to the bowels of the palace, and that markings had been scratched into the walls to lead the way.
Light pray those thugs were telling the truth.
Sturgis crouches beside him and pulls back his hood, grimacing.
After you, Protector, he says. I'll be right behind you.
Wordlessly, Elias hands over the lamp and draws back his own hood, draping his legs over the side. Gripping the ledge, he lowers himself in and drops the final few feet to the bottom. Water splashes as his boots hit, and the smell becomes almost overwhelming.
All right, he calls up. Hand down the lamp.
Sturgis positions himself over the hole and lowers himself down as well, cradling the lamp to his chest with one hand. Bracing the walls with his feet, he bends down and gives their light source to Elias, then drops beside him into the ankle-deep muck. As the rest of the warriors make their way down, Elias explores the tunnel in front of them. It's a narrow, dank sewage channel, with barely enough room to stand, the walls coated with a thick layer of slime. Several passages branch off in different directions, but he spots a crudely drawn image of a fist scratched onto one of the walls.
This way,
he declares, pointing down one of the branching tunnels. They head forward, the men cursing and gagging the entire time. The path winds deeply into the bowels of the city, and the farther they go, the more terrible the stench becomes. Still, they press on, grimly following the crude markings until finally reaching the end. The tunnel opens into a wide chamber filled with fetid, stagnant water, a narrow path of stone leading across to a rusted steel grate on the other side. The flickering flame of Elias's lamp creates dancing glimmers along the water's foul surface, doing little to cast away the oppressive darkness.
Come,
he says softly, trusting his senses and pointing ahead at the grate.
That's the entrance to the palace cellars.
How can you be certain?
Sturgis asks from behind.
I've been here before, remember?
He replies, picking his way across the slick stone path.
It's been some years, but I remember this place well. And watch your footing. That water doesn't look pleasant to swim in.
Carefully, they cross the pool and gather on the other side near the grate. Holding his lamp aloft, Elias can see that the bars have been cut, and they're held together by nothing but a few twisted wires. Handing the light to Sturgis, Elias works the wires with his fingers, untangling them until the grate comes free. He tosses it casually into the cesspool, then climbs into the newly opened tunnel, accepting the light and peering ahead.
Not far now, he thinks, noting how the tunnel slopes upward. Need to keep a wary eye out for booby traps.
They continue forward, half crouching as they press on through the gloom. Eventually, they come to another small grate, this one plastered into the wall with hinges. Elias stops just before it and extinguishes the lamp, plunging the tunnel into shadow. But as their eyes adjust, they can see a faint, wavering light coming from the other side of the iron bars.
The cellars,
he whispers. Taking care to move slowly, he gently pushes on the grate. The metal swings outward, well-oiled hinges turning noiselessly as the way becomes clear. Relaxing, Elias steps out of the tunnel, grateful that the smugglers had made this part easier for them. They find themselves behind a stack of dusty barrels in a dark stone room, the air cold and smelling of mildew and stale beer. As they creep around, Elias realizes that they're alone, the ancient cellar lit by a small grime-covered window. Wine racks and barrels line the walls and floors, along with rat-chewed sacks of grain and an assortment of rusty tools. It looks as if they're the first people to come through this cellar in decades.
All right, he says quietly. The red-fisted dogs have gotten us this far. Their information says that the king's personal chambers are a few floors above us in the east wing of the palace. We should be able to take the servant stairs in order to reach him. Malik, Renlin, Stay here in the cellar to make sure our way of escape remains clear. We'll need to take the sewers if we're going to make it to the conclave.
They nod, hands dropping reflexively to their weapons.
Sturgis and I will scout ahead, he continues, eyeing each of the men in turn. When the way is clear, one of us will come back down here to retrieve the others. Understood?
Again, he's met with nods.
Good, he thinks, taking a step back and casting off his cloak. Let's just hope that if things go awry, they'll still be willing to follow my orders. That'll be the true test of their mettle.
They follow his lead and shed their cloaks, revealing leather armor hiding underneath. Then every man readies his swords, expressions grim as they await the order to move. Silently, Elias and Sturgis make for the stairs, carefully ascending them and opening the door at the top. They find themselves in a long corridor with polished wooden floors, the way brightened by large, colorful windows. The walls are whitewashed and bare, but everything appears clean and well-kept, every surface free of dust. They step out of the stairwell and creep down the hall, searching for anyone who may be lurking around the corners. Thankfully, the area appears to be empty. Locating the servants' stairs, Sturgis returns to the cellar and comes back with the other two rebels, their footsteps quiet on the hardwood floors. Taking a breath, Elias climbs the narrow staircase, keeping a hand on his belt knife as he goes. The steps twist in a spiral, seeming to bore into the structure of the palace like an auger, avoiding the more populated sections where the king's visitors dwell. When they reach the third floor, Elias motions for everyone behind him to stop, the plain wooden door waiting before him. He opens it a crack, wincing as it creaks slightly with the movement. No one seems to be waiting on the other side, so he opens it a little more and slips through the gap. He finds himself in a much more lavishly decorated hallway, with thick plush carpets lining the floors and exquisite paintings adorning the brightly lit walls. Doors branch off every which way down the corridor, and he feels a slight sense of apprehension moving forward. This is where it gets tricky, he thinks, silently making his way down the hall. The king can be anywhere at this point, as can his guards. Coming up on a corner, Elias turns stealthily to make sure he's still alone. No one seems to be on this floor. There are no footsteps or voices in any direction. He rounds the corner and inches forward, discovering yet another hallway, continuing north in a slight uphill slope. This seems even more lavish than the first, and the doors are all hand-etched and painted with gold leaf embossing the edges. That looks kingly to me, he thinks in satisfaction, turning to go back to Sturgis and the others. As he returns to the servants' stairs, he hears a faint noise coming from one of the rooms off to his left. He dives behind a potted plant just as the door opens. A serving girl in a light brown dress and an apron steps out, a duster in one hand and cleaning rag in the other. She walks in Elias's direction, humming softly to herself, oblivious to his presence. Before she can discover him, he lunges at her from behind the plant, grabbing her and clamping his hand over her mouth. She freezes, her slight figure going stiff as a board, but fortunately she doesn't scream. "Shh," he whispers, pulling her back to the room she came from. It looks to be a broom closet.
I don't mean to do you any harm, but I won't hesitate to knock you out if you make any noise, do you understand?
Trembling, she nods.
Good.
He closes the door and releases the girl, prompting her to drop her duster and rag. She wraps her arms around herself, shivering and growing pale.
No, Elias says, drawing his belt knife. Hold still.
She whimpers as he tears away her apron, sawing off a few strips of fabric with his knife. He uses these to bind and gag her, preventing her from fleeing. A small part of him feels pity for the tears rolling down her cheeks, but he pushes those feelings away.
I have a job to do, he thinks coldly. The fate of the whole world hangs in the balance. I can't afford for anyone or anything to get in my way. Don't move and keep quiet, he commands, making his way to the door. Everything will be all right, I promise.
As quickly as he entered, he exits the small room, while pulling out his hand crossbow and slipping back out into the hall. He moves swiftly to the stairwell and notifies the others that the way is clear. Then, together, they begin making their way to the other side of the wing. As the decorations grow richer, the hallways grow wider, and soon they find themselves in the middle of a wide corridor filled with marble statues and expensive-looking tapestries. At the end of the hall, a large set of doors are carved with the reliefs of two roaring lions. Standing in front of the doors are two guards in polished metal armor. Both jump in surprise upon seeing the nightingales. Elias immediately looses a bolt from his crossbow, catching one of the guards in the eye. He goes down with a metallic thud as his companion calls out in alarm. The other nightingales follow suit, pulling out their ranged weapons and launching feathered shafts at the second guard, puncturing him like a pincushion and knocking him down as well. Elias curses, rushing up to the door and the corpses lying before it.
"That yell just blew our cover," he growls,
tossing his crossbow to the side and pulling out his belt knife.
"Edwin, Chris, watch our backs. If anyone else comes, deal with them. I have a feeling we're going to have to fight our way out of here."
Both men wordlessly nod and mutter, "Yes, sir."
"Sturgis," he says, turning to the captain, "with me. Ready?"
"Been ready for years," he replies coldly, giving his sword a twirl.
Elias nods, then pushes open the doors and rushes inside, Sturgis on his heels. They find themselves in a grand audience chamber lit with candelabras and dozens of wide stained glass windows. The room is richly furnished, bookshelves lining the walls, but none of these things holds their attention for long as their eyes are drawn to the handful of armed guards on the other side of the room.
"Hells," Elias curses, skidding to a stop.
The guards cry out a half second later, pulling their swords and sprinting to intercept the interlopers. There are four of them in total, and they wear tasseled knots at their armored shoulders, the color of their crimson cloaks.
"You go right, I go left,"
Elias commands, raising his belt knife and pulling out a sword breaker from a strap on his leg.
"Now!"
Sturgis breaks away, and together they engage the soldiers with violent intensity. Using the sword breaker to catch the blade of the first guard, Elias propels the sword wide and drives his belt knife into the man's throat. The blade pierces his mail coif and goes deep into his neck, spilling blood down his breastplate like a red waterfall. His body collapses just as the second guard attacks, and Elias is forced to dodge to avoid being sliced, moving nimbly to the side. Behind him, the sound of clashing metal indicates that Sturgis has engaged the other guards as well. Falling into a defensive stance, Elias circles his opponent, watching every subtle movement as the man brings up his longsword in a two-handed grip. He lunges an instant later, deftly feinting and then stabbing at Elias's heart. The ranger bats the blade aside and steps back, warily bringing up his knife as he adjusts his grip on the hilt. After a few seconds, the guard strikes again, this time feinting with another stab and then switching to a slashing attack. This too Elias dodges, but only barely. Using the serrated edge of his sword breaker to latch onto the crossguard of the sword, Elias pulls, attempting to yank the weapon from his hand. The guard's grip holds, but he's thrown off balance, pitching forward and stumbling awkwardly over his own metal-clad feet. Seizing upon the sudden opening, Elias brings up his knife and slips it into the unarmored section just beneath the man's armpit. The man grunts, cursing as Elias pulls the twice-bloodied dagger out of his flesh and leaps out of his reach. The guard seems unsteady now, raising his sword with difficulty as blood pours down his side. He desperately attacks again, trying to make for Elias's neck, but he's far too slow. Dodging the sluggish attack, he goes in for the kill, ramming the point of his knife through the man's cheek and into his skull. He twitches for a moment, then falls in a heap, his sword dropping from his nerveless fingers and clattering on the marble floor. Spinning, Elias sees Sturgis locked in the fight of his life against the two remaining guards, one of whom looks near to collapsing from a gash on his thigh. The protector runs and dispatches the wounded guard, finishing him off with a strike to the base of his skull and sending him down hard. Sturgis pulls his eyes away from the fight for a split second to look at Elias, renewed energy filling his visage. But the distraction proves fatal as the guard stabs the tip of his sword into his belly just beneath the rib cage.
"No!"
Elias growls, hooking his sword breaker around the base of the guard's sword.
He manages to pull the blade out, but the point is red with Sturgis's blood. The Nightingale staggers backward, clutching his stomach with a look of shock painting his face. Snarling, Elias ends the fight with the final guard, opening the man's throat with a swift flick of his dagger. As the body drops, he rushes to Sturgis's side.
"My own damn fault," Sturgis mumbles, falling to his knees with one hand pressed to his bleeding wound. "Should have kept my eyes on the fight."
"Easy now," Elias says, easing him to a sitting position. "Let's take a look at this."
He gingerly pulls Sturgis's hand away and examines the wound, resisting a grimace when he realizes just how bad it is.
"The blade went too deep," he thinks, noting the amount of blood. "I've seen this kind of wound before. He's done for."
"Don't fuss over me,"
Sturgis grunts, his eyes gleaming.
"I'm not going to be of much more use, but you have a job to do, Protector. See that it gets done."
Elias meets his gaze, then nods, standing and taking a deep breath.
"Go join with the others if you can. They may need your help holding the hall."
Sturgis offers a stout "aye," then staggers to his feet, breathing heavily. Elias turns to regard a set of gilded doors on the far side of the room, a giant A embossed on their surface.
"It's time to end this," he says under his breath,
resolutely approaching the portal. He can hear fierce whispering on the other side, and he thinks he recognizes one of them as the harsh voice of the king. Setting his jaw, Elias pushes open the doors and steps inside, weapons held at the ready. He barely makes it 3 steps inside before something takes hold of his legs, squeezing his ankles like metal vices and preventing him from moving forward. Growling, he looks up to see an imperious woman with a glowing blue crystal in her hand. His eyes widen in recognition.
"The High Magus," Elias thinks, struggling as the shimmering blue bindings wrap around his wrists as well. "What's she doing here?"
"I have him," she says calmly before looking Elias directly in the eyes. "You chose the wrong day to come here, assassin."
"That's no mere assassin," replies a deep voice, and Elias turns to see King Æthelgar stepping out from behind a stone pillar, a small, knowing smirk on his black-bearded face.
"Elias Keane, I should have known that if anyone could break into my palace, it would be you. You've tried and failed once before. Pity I didn't kill you when I had the chance."
Elias rips his gaze away from the red-robed king and gives the High Magus a wounded look.
"Magus, you're working with him? This man will see this kingdom destroyed by the R'hllar."
The corners of her eyes pinch together, but her lips purse together in a tight line.
"The king and the conclave may not always see eye to eye, but we do not condone regicide as a reasonable solution to our problems."
"No," Elias replies, accusation heavy in his voice. "Instead, you would stand by while he murders and plots to consolidate his power. Your inaction has led to the deaths of thousands, and will likely lead to the end of Tarsinium as we know it."
Elias can see conflict beginning to war in the woman's eyes, but she doesn't release him from her spell.
"Your words are meaningless, Ranger," the king sneers. "Or perhaps I should call you Nightingale? It's hard to keep track. Turncoats have a way of switching alliances whenever the need suits them."
"I serve only the realm, your majesty," Elias replies through gritted teeth, "which is more than can be said of you."
The king stands beside Sylvania, his hands clasped neatly behind his back.
"The Nightingales are rebels and traitors. All deserve the headsman's axe, which is precisely where you will be soon. Once the High Magus and I have completed our business, I will see to your execution personally."
He leans in, his smile widening.
"I'll try not to relish it, I assure you."
Rage boils in Elias's stomach, but he looks once more to the High Magus in a desperate attempt to sway her.
"Zara Denel would be ashamed of you, Magus, if she were still with us. But she would never have stood by while you bent the knee to this tyrant."
This seems to strike a nerve, and her eyes briefly flash with shock.
"What do you mean? I was under the impression the Nightingales took her captive."
She takes a step toward him. Do you know where she is? What's happened to Seeker Denil?
Your Seeker was captured, but not by Nightingales, Elias declares. The man responsible is standing right beside you.
The traitor is speaking lies, Magus, the king replies, feigning nonchalance. Don't listen to him.
The ranger ignores him.
King Æthelgar took her and my apprentice when he murdered the Nightingale Protector under the banner of peace. She's likely rotting in a dungeon in this very city.
The blood drains from the High Magus's face, and she whirls to face the king.
Is this true?
Æthelgar furrows his brows and makes a placating gesture with his hands.
Are you really going to listen to this man? This traitor? I have no idea what he's talking about. He's just trying to turn you against me.
Every word of it is true, Elias shouts back. You slaughtered your potential allies and took Owen and Zara as an act of petty vengeance. Don't deny it, snake.
The king's eyes blaze, and he abruptly pulls a dagger from the folds of his robes.
You dare speak to me in such a way, filthy woodsman? I should kill you where you stand.
Don't touch him,
the High Magus says, stopping the king before he can make good on his threat. She pauses, then asks more softly,
Is it true, Your Majesty? Did you imprison one of my most trusted mages without my consent?
The king regards her coldly.
No. Then why haven't the rebels contacted me or sent me some kind of demand for her ransom?
She asks, brows furrowing.
Can you prove that you were not involved in her disappearance?
He barks a bitter laugh.
A king must provide evidence to prove his innocence? Bah! What rubbish!
He forged a letter,
Elias continues, ignoring the blustering monarch.
He impersonated you to lure the Nightingales out of the mountains. They came to forge an alliance with you, High Magus, but instead they were met only with treachery.
Lies!
The king bellows, taking a dangerous step toward the ranger, but Sylvania cuts him off.
Surely we can get to the bottom of this matter, she says. Let us put this man in chains, then send a missive to the Nightingale camp. If they cannot produce this letter, then we will know for sure.
The king eyes her for a long moment, then finally lets out a low, dangerous chuckle.
You're weak, Sylvania. That's why the conclave wanes in strength. You lack the resolve to do what's necessary while your authority dribbles away, taken by leeches. Yes, I took your precious Seeker, but she's no longer in my possession. I had the pair of them exiled for committing treason against the crown.
Sylvania's eyes widen in disbelief. Though the admission is egregious, Elias can't help but smile inwardly, feeling a small sense of hope for his apprentice.
Owen is skilled enough to survive the wastes beyond the Ark. I'd wager he's still alive out there. Better to be free in a wasteland than half dead in some cell.
You had her exiled simply for being stuck on the wrong side of the siege?
The High Magus sounds horrified.
Yes, the king replies, giving her an arrogant smirk. And I'd do it again, too. There can be no room for traitors in this kingdom, even among the mages.
You're a real bastard, Elias says. You're unworthy to wear your crown.
Æthelgar raises his dagger menacingly.
One more word out of you, and I'll make you wish for death. My torturers are exceptional at squeezing every drop of pain out of Nightingale scum.
You'll do no such thing.
The High Magus draws herself up to her full height and raises her chin at the king.
He's coming with me. You have no right or authority,
Æthelgar says through gritted teeth.
Ranger Keen is privy to important information that the Circle will want to hear. I will not allow you to bring him to harm without a fair trial.
Her tone is icy as she regards the monarch.
Consider this man now under the Conclave's protection.
The king glances at Elias, his expression a rictus of hate. Then, without warning, he lunges toward the High Magus, plunging his dagger straight into her stomach and twisting violently. She gasps and staggers backward, dropping her talisman and clutching at her wound. The magical bonds around Elias's wrists and ankles suddenly loosen, the spell evaporating to nothing. The ranger bellows in rage, charging forward and shoving the blithe king aside as he wrenches the blood-covered blade from the High Magus's abdomen. Aethelgar falls to the floor, the dagger clattering to the ground.
"Help!"
the king yells, shrieking for his guards, but it's too late. Elias leaps on top of him, sliding the edge of his belt knife across the traitorous monarch's throat, silencing his cries. The king gurgles, eyes growing wide as he reaches up to stem the flow of blood. Within a matter of seconds, he goes still, face frozen in an expression of complete and utter shock.